This meeting is now being recorded.
Okay, starting with roll, Judge Conklin.
Present.
Judge Barton.
Here.
Judge Blum.
Here.
Judge Buckley.
Here.
Judge Cope.
Here.
Judge Herman.
Here.
Judge Heinrich.
Here.
Judge Lucas. Judge Marginis.
Here.
Judge Maragonda.
Here.
Judge McCabe.
Here.
Ms. Carter. Ms. Eberhardt.
Here.
Mr. Finke.
Here.
Ms. Fleming.
Here.
Ms. Flenner.
Here.
Mr. Harrigan.
Here.
Mr. Lewis.
Here.
Mr. Planet. Mr. Roddy.
Here.
Ms. Romero-Souls.
Here.
Mr. Taylor. Ms. Ugrin Capobianco.
Here.
And Mr. Yamasaki.
Here.
Advisory members, Mr. Wardlaw and Mr. Theodorovich. Zlaco.
Okay. He's joining in a minute.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's a couple minutes late. All right.
Okay. That's roll. Thank you.
Great. Thank you so much. So I just want to make a couple opening remarks, and then we'll move to some housekeeping items by Brandy and then get started on our more important business. And the first remark I want to make, as I'm sure all members are aware, I hope they are, is the meeting we had before the Judicial Council last Friday. We appeared, myself and Rebecca appeared, along with Lucy and Leah and Brandy and Zlatko, to present your work, the committee's work, both from FMS, the subcommittee, and our committee in general about our recommendations concerning WAFM or a funding methodology continuing for the trial courts. It was a detailed yet understandable presentation. Thanks in large part, if not singularly, to each of the staff members and Rebecca and the knowledge they brought to the table. There were probing questions from council members that I think indicated they were seriously considering this, but there were also what I thought to be very important comments from council members thanking the entire committee. And my interpretation of those comments were that they were directed to all the members of FMS and all the members of TICPAC to thank all of you for the task that you completed. They recognized that this sort of a short leash on this, that it took us some significant meetings, both the subcommittees and committees as a whole. But there were more than one comment made, including from the chief, about their observations of the hard work put in and the collaboration and cooperation of all committee members, recognizing we had some hard decisions, we worked through them, and we came to what they unanimously approved to be an appropriate funding methodology. So I hope I'm not speaking out of turn for speaking for the chief and others on the council. They're not on this call, but that was my interpretation, at least, that they were very impressed with the work we all did, and I wanted to pass that along and then summarize by saying that the funding methodology was approved. So we're now moving forward. We have more work to do, obviously, implementing it, but that funding methodology has been approved. With that, as I understand it, Brandy, we have no public comment. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Any other housekeeping items that we need to cover before we get started?
Just a reminder that the meeting is open to the public, is being recorded, and to ask members to place phones on mute when speaking, not on hold, and also to please identify yourselves prior to speaking for the benefit of all participating.
Great. Thanks so much. So the first matter of business we have before us today, I should have muted my phone, I'm sorry with that chime, is the approval of the minutes from our December 4th meeting, and by a reminder that meeting was the one that involved an approval of what has now been the funding methodology approved by the council. So I would ask for a motion to approve the minutes of the December 4th meeting.
This is Tanya. I'll move.
Yamasaki seconds.
Moved and seconded. Any further discussion concerning the minutes of the December 4th meeting? Hearing none, considering this is a phone call, I'm simply going to ask if there's any opposition to the motion which has been seconded to approval of the minutes of the December 4th meeting. And I hear none, so we'll therefore show that the minutes from the December 4th meeting have been approved. We're now going to move to discussion and possible action items, and the first is item one in your materials, which I assume you all have. They were posted timely. That starts at page 7, and we have Suzanne with us to walk us through this. I also did receive what I'm not considering to be a public comment because it's a question from a member, and I'm sorry, I'm clicking out of a window here as I get to this. From Judge Marginis in Orange County. So, Judge, I didn't want to cut you off at all. After Suzanne summarizes, obviously, I'd more than appreciate you stating the question or concern that you had about this issue. But if you don't mind, we'll start with Suzanne so she can present it. Suzanne?
Thank you, Judge.
This is Suzanne Lahugdy, Senior Budget Analyst with the Judicial Council Budget Services, and I'm presenting the item one, which is a deliberation regarding proposed changes to the Judicial Council approved process, criteria, and required information for trial court trust funds, funds held on behalf requests of the trial courts. In March 2017, the Fiscal Planning Subcommittee discussed potential revisions to this policy, and at its October 4th, 2017 meeting, it approved recommending or forwarding proposed changes to TICFAC for its consideration on whether to refer the proposed changes to the Judicial Council. Attachment B on page 13 of your materials has the proposed changes to the procedures with additions in italics and deletions and strikeout. The primary changes are in section 5, which is on page 14, which would give the Fiscal Planning Subcommittee authority to approve amended requests without those amended requests needing to also be approved by the Judicial Council. Instead, an informational item would be provided to the Council after the amendments are approved. The Fiscal Planning Subcommittee could still refer those amended requests to the Council, and those courts with approved amended requests would be required to provide an annual update for the use of approved funds over multiple fiscal years. Another change is having the request sent to the Director of Budget Services rather than the Administrative Director of the JCC. And in addition, there are other technical changes to reflect the Fiscal Planning Subcommittee as the body that hears the request. And there are other updates for current JCC reporting nomenclature. I'm open to any questions if you have them.
So, Judge Marginis, I didn't know if this was a time when you wanted to interject with that question.
Sure. Let me begin by indicating that I'm a very recent member of TICFAC. I was not a member at the time that this item was proposed, discussed, and is teed up for approval. My question had to do with item number 5, and that is, even though what we just heard was this is an approval process, 5A indicates, quote, and I'll quote, denied revised requests will result in the immediate change in the designation of the fund balance from restricted to unrestricted and no longer held on behalf of the court unless the council specifies an alternative action. And indeed, the process for revising the request leaves out the Judicial Council. It indicates that the process, the approval process has to follow items 2B through 2D, and there's nothing in there really about approval. It's simply an indication of who gets the request, and D, the final part of that, indicates that Budget Services staff reviews the request, asks the court to provide any missing or incomplete information, et cetera. And the final indication is that issues a report to the Fiscal Planning Subcommittee of TICFAC. Mm-hmm. So I'm just wondering if indeed there is a denial, what happens? It indicates there'll be an immediate change. There's no right of appeal to the Judicial Council. And is that, was that an error in the drafting, or am I just not following the proposal correctly?
So you're concerned that if the amended request gets denied, there's no ability to take it to the Judicial Council?
Before that even, it says that a request to revise request, the prior request, the original request, has to follow 2B through 2D, and there's really nothing in there I see that talks about an approval. So if you go through that process, where are you? It doesn't say you know, it gets approved and so on. All I see in 5A is if it's denied, that's it. You're done. Anyway, that's my concern.
Okay.
So, Suzanne, can you walk us through, just so we're all clear, each step that this, so the request initially comes into FPS, and then let's take
right.
it from there as it matriculates up to or moves to up the chain, so to speak.
Okay, so it's the requests are to be submitted to the Director of Budget Services. Typically, I'm CC'd or included in that email, or they come to me and I let Zlatko know, and he lets Martin know of the requests that have come in. Then Budget Services staff may review it and work with the courts to make any changes, and then I set up the meetings with the Fiscal Planning Subcommittee, and then the Fiscal Planning Subcommittee reviews it and refers it, as it currently is, to the Judicial Council for approval. So that's your steps 2B through D, and I believe I'm thinking that 5B then becomes the next step in the process.
Well,
which
sorry.
Yes.
I'm sorry. Go ahead. I thought you were.
So, Judge Martin, is your, and I'm sorry to interrupt, but is your concern that whether it be approved or denied, that it does not get to the council?
Well, if you look at the process as just explained to us, it doesn't, and you follow 2B through 2D, there's nothing in there that indicates that the request gets approved. It just says the Fiscal Planning Subcommittee meets, reviews the request, and asks questions. Period.
Well, all new, so 2A clarifies that all new requests are, in fact, going to the council. So
right.
this is only dealing with amended requests.
Correct. And so that's my question. It has to do only with amended requests. And where is the indication that anybody approves it or not? It's not in 2B through 2D. And 5A just tells us that if the request, the revised request is denied, then something happens. It doesn't say who even denies the request or approves it.
5B is the FPS may choose to refer any amended request to the council. If the FPS chooses to approve the amended request at its level, the FPS will provide the judicial council. But are you looking for a specific language that says the FPS has the authority to approve the amended request?
Perhaps I'm being overly technical. My question simply was, where in here does it indicate that FPS or indeed anyone approves an amended request?
And I was assuming that the language in 5B was giving us that authority, but we could add additional language.
So I guess for clarification, that's the role of FPS. So the
yes.
stated role of the FPS is to consider requests and approve or deny. So you're right, maybe we need to state it, but these, by definition, FPS would then make a decision. The council just had it on their consent agenda last week, the FPS requests.
Okay.
So they went to the council. But if you're looking but you're right, we live by words, that's our profession.
Yeah.
As to whether or not we need to specify in 5,
or
and
in
2D,
or in 2D to say the FPS has the authority to approve amended requests, just something as simple as that?
Approve or apparently deny, either approve or deny.
Okay.
But ultimately, yeah. Judge Marginis, are you looking for clarification that ultimately either the FPS decision to approve or deny ultimately does get to the council?
That's a policy decision. I'm just working on the grammar and the, I'm wordsmithing. Whether or not all approvals have to go to the Judicial Council is above my pay grade. All I'm talking about is if one reads this, that's the question that came to my mind as I read this proposed revision of the process. But I leave it up to you folks to decide whether or not this is worth amending further, or if everybody agrees that the process is there and we don't need to have it written down. I'll leave it up to others.
Suzanne, did you have a suggestion in that?
All I was going to do was add to Section 2D, because we're referring to that in 5, after the last sentence, at the SPS has approval to approve or deny amended requests.
Has authority to approve.
Authority.
Okay. Yeah, that I think fixes the problem that I see.
So before I ask for a motion, is there any further discussion on this item? So, Judge Marginis, would you be willing to move to approve this item with your suggested language added to 2D?
Yes, I so move.
Okay, so I just want to make sure that motion is clear. Is there a second to that motion?
Yes, Yamasaki seconds.
Okay.
Judge Conklin?
Yes.
I'm sorry, this is Nancy Eberhardt from San Bernardino. When you say this item, do you mean the entire package or just the discussion that we had?
Well, I guess I'm speaking broadly as to item one, and that is the suggested changes to the policy.
And that was my understanding when I made the motion.
Unfortunately, I have two items as well then.
Great. Go ahead.
Okay. Again, this is Nancy from San Bernardino. We recently went through a request to hold funds on behalf and kind of fumbled our way through because we had a zero fund balance at the end of the year, and we're requesting to hold funds because of delayed implementation of case management system. So we ran into a few issues, and I thought maybe it would be something that we would need to include here. And the first was that because our 1% cap was not met at the end of the year, we actually had a zero fund balance. We were not aware that amounts would be tagged back to that 1% cap balance before funds were held on behalf of. So we wound up having to amend our request. That's not noted here in the instructions, and I thought it might be a good clarifying item to insert in there. Also, when we first applied, we were instructed that because our request to hold on behalf was less than a year, we would not have to fill out the entire request where you're inserting your budget. And I don't see that here in those instructions either, and was wondering if that's something that we would want to put in there. And that's it.
Any comments on that? Or Suzanne, did you have any comments on that?
It is true that this policy procedure does not include any reference to the 1% cap calculation. That was in the original item when this policy was approved. I could capture some language from that item and include it in here as an introductory statement above one, so that it just kind of gives an overview as to why this policy and procedure is in place. I don't have that language on me right now, but I can understand clarifying, tying it back to the 1% cap, because some people don't recognize that this is directly tied to the 1% cap calculations. And then, the second issue was on, could you remind me?
I'm so sorry. The second issue was on the less than 1 year delay in using the set aside funds. Because it was a less than 1 year delay, we were instructed under section 4 that we would not need to add the 3 year history of year end fund balances, revenues, and expenditures.
I could add that clarification. That goes out in the email that goes out to all courts at the beginning of each fiscal year when we're giving them, advising them of this process. It's an instruction in the email, and I could very much add that into the instructions on how to fill out the report.
So I guess what I want to make sure we're clear on, because there's been a motion made and seconded to approve this language of this process, and I don't want to speak for you or misinterpret, but it sounds like this is more, Nancy, an issue of the instructions that accompany the policy. And I am concerned that Suzanne has stated she doesn't have the language, obviously, at hand right now, and that we would approve something that would not have that language in it. So would you – I think your comments are very valid, and they need to be addressed, but it appears to me we could solve that concern through just modifying the instructions to this policy and leave this policy as is. Does that sound consistent with your concern?
Judge Conklin, this is David. If I can just ask a question.
Sure.
So I think I would be helpful to get further clarification on Nancy's proposal. One of the concerns that I have is the agreement and support that the Judicial Council received to establish this mechanism for courts to save money for very costly projects that in many instances requires years of frugal savings, if you will, to accumulate enough resources to move forward with a particular project. But this was a mechanism to help us cope with the 1% cap that was placed on all of courts. It concerns me a little bit if we make reference to the 1% cap, because I think it's better to be left separate from that particular issue. I mean, one of the pitches that we made was courts need to have an opportunity to save money for large projects because of one reason or another. So I am concerned that if we make reference to the 1% cap, there may be, I don't know, a wrong impression about what it is that we're trying to accomplish here. So if maybe Nancy, if you can, you know, provide me further detail on what you believe the language should be to remedy whatever issue that you have.
Sure, David. This is Nancy again. I think some sort of language that would indicate that the request need only be for amounts above the 1% cap, something as broad as that.
Well,
David, this is Suzanne. One of the issues that we've had is that we had five courts that had approved requests, and then their 1% cap calculation, the amount that was going to be over the 1% cap, ended up being less than what they had on their approved request. So I have had all five of those courts submit amended requests so that their funds held on behalf request was in line with their 1% cap reduction that was going to occur. Otherwise, what we do have is requests that are above and beyond money that we can return to them.
I see. I gotcha. That's
this is Tanya. I have a concern about referencing the cap as 1% and putting the 1% number in there, because clearly we don't want 1% as our cap. Is there any way to structure some language that would give the same knowledge, I guess it would be, from the process standpoint to everybody without limiting it ourselves to that 1%?
Suzanne, I don't know if you have a thought on that.
Well, I guess because when this policy was approved by the Judicial Council, it specifically references that this is in response to the 1% cap process. So although it's not in the policy itself, I think this falls more in line with Mr. Yamasaki's concerns that we not reference it in the policy. This policy came about because of something that is statutorily required in the 1% cap calculation. And until that changes, they are tied together, if not, I understand your desire to have something larger than a 1%, but that still is what we currently have to live by statutorily.
This is Judge Marigonda. What about the statement that it would be within any legally mandated or legally permitted reserve amount?
Oh, I like that.
Okay.
Because that doesn't, you know, that states it without saying 1%, because I think we have a goal. I believe we still have the goal, is to mitigate that 1% to something else.
And that's Tanya speaking, and I think that's
sorry.
A good, but that's okay. I think that's a good theme to keep in mind as we work through this. So with that, Nancy, would that satisfy your concern?
This is Nancy. Yes, I believe it would.
Okay.
David, what do you think of that?
Yeah, I think that reference should, well, Judge Marginis is the one who made the motion, and if he accepts the revision in the language, I would certainly, I don't know if it's resecond or if it's accepted.
Friendly amendment. Yeah. Right, but again, I've learned from, I just want to be real clear so staff knows where would this language be inserted. So we have to deal with the document we all have in front of us in the materials, recognizing this is a public meeting, and these are the materials to consider. Suzanne, do you have a thought where that language would go?
I was thinking that it might go
we could just add it as a 9 on
That's
page,
what I was thinking, a 9.
Page 15, paragraph 9.
Yeah.
And could you summarize back for all the committee members what your understanding of what that language would be?
Sure. The language would be something to the effect of final TCTF funds held on behalf requests will be in line or cannot exceed statutorily required reserve amounts.
How about will be consistent with statutorily reserved amounts? Does that work? So, Judge Marginis, are you willing to accept that friendly amendment to the policy as proposed?
I am, and thank you.
And David, you would then second?
Yes, I would.
Great. Any additional concerns or comments on this item itself and the stated policy? So we now have a motion with a friendly amendment that's been approved with the amendment, that's been moved with the amendment and seconded. Any opposition as stated? Hearing none, then I'll deem that has been passed and approved. That's item one. Now moving to item two, and this is trial court budget change proposals. And Zlatko, you're back on the line with us? Z, are you with us?
Yes. Am I not?
There you go.
All right.
You're usually so timid and shy that I just couldn't hear from you. So.
Yeah, that's me.
I've asked Zlatko to sort of add some of his guidance or wisdom on this, because this is impacted obviously by the recent proposed budget of the governor. And to be quite candid, my suggestion is going to be that we table this item and for consideration to a later meeting for what Zlatko, I think, is going to detail for us right now. Zlatko?
Yeah, let's compare, say, where we were this time last year and when we were building our budget, and even the prior year. Governor's budget had come out 2 years ago with about $20 million of discretionary funding, and then last year there was zero, and very little of our needs were being met in those budgets. But when we now have a budget that is very strong in terms of operational funds, it meets construction needs, which are always been on the list. It deals with self-help. A number of budget change proposals that we had submitted this year, not to a small degree, based on the hard work that we all did to convince the Department of Finance to include them. And now as we're building the BCP list for 1920, that was essentially the survey was completed prior to the budget coming out. And so I think it'd be worthwhile for us to sort of reconsider what it is that we see our funding priorities may be in light of that budget, and ensure that we have a good strategic approach to building our needs next year. If the budget is successful and it's as proposed to make it through the final budget act, then, the issue of operational funding becomes much less of an issue as it compared to the prior years when we had hundreds of millions of dollars of a gap. So I think it's just important that we do consider that. And also, as we sort of think about 1920 budget change proposals, we're also heading into a budget that would be considered by the next administration. So I think it's very important that we consider strategically what might be our approach for branch priorities sort of going forward. So while we appreciate, I think, the work that we've done and you know, in terms of developing this this list, I think it would benefit from additional discussion, maybe a focused discussion about sort of what is our strategies this spring to pursue through the JBBC and ultimately to the council. But I think that the budget that was proposed was a bit of a game changer of our minds from the last couple of years, and we've had a lot addressed in the budget.
So I don't want anybody to think that I'm in any way trying to stifle discussion of this, and I guess I better be careful because I use the word table the discussion. I think procedurally that means that we can't discuss it, so I would say defer the discussion to our next meeting to allow staff to go back and perhaps after consideration of the intricacies of the budget to provide us all with BCPs that might be more attuned to or reflective of the proposal. And I don't want to overgeneralize this, but I hesitate that we snatch defeat from the jaws of victory. And therefore, I think it might be worthwhile for us to defer this to a future meeting so that we can get further guidance from budget staff, which frankly has, I think, a good feel for and expertise of other factors that may come into play. So is there anybody that has a concern about or wants to make a comment on simply deferring the discussion of item two, that is taking no action on item two until a future meeting? Okay, well, I'm not hearing anything. I was trying to give people a chance to either finish chewing their food or press their mute button off, but I haven't heard a comment. So having no comment then, I'm...
Judge, one second. I believe somebody was raised their hand, so to speak.
Right. Oh. Yeah, this is Judge Marginis. I did, and I agree with Judge Conklin.
I appreciate that. Okay. Then hearing none, we're going to, as the chair then, and thank you very much for everybody considering this, I'm simply going to show that item number two is deferred until a future tick-back meeting to allow further information to be provided to the committee for alternatives and consideration of BCPs. That takes us off of our action items, and we're now moving to our information items. And information item number one kind of ties into what Zlatko just stated, but I think he has a little more detail for us. Zlatko, this is now starting on page 27 of your materials.
Yes, thank you, Judge. We did have, I think, almost 180 or 90 people join the phone calls that we conducted, I guess, a week ago, isn't it? Or, you know, almost a week ago, Thursday, and went over the memo. There's been a few questions in particular that I wanted to sort of address, but I don't know to what extent, maybe just in very brief, as I said, just on the last BCP issue. Hopefully everybody received the memo, and if not, please email me and we can get you the memo that was sent out, because that was, I think, a good document that laid out what was the governor's budget proposal for the branch. But in short, there's $75 million of viewed as discretionary funding. The administration indicates we'll look to the Judicial Council and even recommendations made by the Futures Commission regarding potential uses of that $75 million for trial court operations. There's $47.8 million as it relates to bringing courts that are under the funding methodology average funding level of 76.9%. So that was how WAFM had calculated sort of the current available resources against need. So that's an important pot of equalization funding to bring those courts up. Substantial investment in trial, self-help. Some smaller issues as it relates to a pilot for online traffic adjudication, language access, expansion, court-appointed special advocate program, CCPR. So some of these were our BCPs that we had submitted. There were a couple of things that I did want to sort of mention that were important as far as what the work we have before us, say, over the next months of the spring and going into the summer. As it relates to the revenue backfill, the amount that's in the current budget act is $55 million. We had, as many of you know, worked with the Department of Finance to convince them that that amount may not be sufficient given some of the policy proposals that were included in the Budget Act as it relates to driver's license suspensions. We currently estimate a shortfall of about $8 million in the current year. The amount that's included in the budget above the 55 is $34 million to deal with that issue, but there's not yet been a commitment on the backfill of this of the current shortfall. So we're working with them on that. But to the extent that there is not resolution on the backfill for the current year, then I think that this body may need to think about what that means in terms of the potential allocations of a mid-year shortfall. But we're hopeful that the revenues will pick up and there will not be such a shortfall in the current year. Next, related to that is an impact on the revenues coming into the IMF. The Improvement and Modernization Fund, as you know, it funds many, many programs that are pretty critical to trial court operations, from IT, legal, HR. There's a number of areas that the IMF deals with. And what we're seeing in terms of estimated revenue impacts and revenue shortfalls is between a $5 to $6 million problem in 18-19. Now, that has improved since our original first updates this fall, but we just wanted to make sure that we keep that on the radar for folks, because we're going to probably, to the extent the administration is not willing or able to look at that shortfall as part of the spring budget process, then we will have to take action to reduce allocations pending for 18-19. We believe we have sufficient revenues to make it through the 17-18 fiscal year with the fund balance to carry forward, but we're seeing an issue because of the declining revenues in 18-19 and ongoing. So as we've done in the past years, we'd had to convene the Revenue and Expenditure Subcommittee to look at the programs and determine what might be the best course of action to recommend to the council to deal with that shortfall. So didn't want to put that as a side issue. I think it's important because the importance of the IMF programs and the fact that we've done so many reductions in the IMF, and so really we're getting down to the most difficult programs that we'd have to look at in terms of solving the problems. So, again, that's sort of my more detailed look and what might be work for the TICBAC and the FMS and the Revenue Expenditure Subcommittee over the next handful of months in preparing both managing the current year budget and the budget year budget for the IMF.
Okay, I appreciate that summary. Any general questions about recognizing we're just in the early stages of the proposed budget, about the budget proposal for 18-19? Any more comments from budget staff, from Zlatko or anybody else about allocations and how they might be
not for me. I just failed to mention that the substantial investment in the construction program was a welcome change from the past few years in the budget. So very pleased about that result. But overall, it's a good budget, but just wanted to put these two issues on the radar about the current year TCTF and the budget year IMF.
Great. Any other questions from anybody? Remember, so the governor had the proposals of both the bringing up the courts to the courts that are underneath the band, so to speak, within, and then additional funds, and those are all proposals at this point that will move forward. Okay, then if there's no other discussion on info item one, we'll move to info item two, which you all have in your materials. So this is essentially an update on the agenda that was approved by E&P for our work in 2018. So this has gone to executive and planning. They've approved it. So I just wanted you all to be aware of it. A couple of things I just wanted you to take note of. I know you probably can all obviously have read through it. And one is the notes there on page 34 that we're going to propose or move forward with a proposed rule change to Rule of Court 10.64C1 that defines presiding judge for the purpose of our membership. as a current presiding judge or a past presiding judge within the last 10 years. In other words, right now we have presiding judge and immediate past presiding judge. For new appointments, existing members would be eligibly reappointed regardless of the time since they were a presiding judge. So just so you folks understand the rationale behind this, obviously this group is made up of in equal ratio CEOs and PJs, and that's for a purpose, to bring that knowledge to the table when we're discussing budget issues. My observation as the chair is that that people are rotating off too soon, in the sense of, and maybe it's just me, I'm a slow learner, but the time it took me to become familiar with budget issues, then all of a sudden it's like, but the term's going. So this would allow the flexibility to keep members on and therefore sort of work with their heritage and wisdom of budget issues as we move forward. So it's a bit in the future, because it's obviously a proposed change to the rule of court and we have to go through a lot of hurdles to get there. But that's sort of a significant part of moving forward. Also, as it's noted, I'm recommending that we decrease the size of membership from 26 to 24. Not in any way, again, to try to narrow our discussion or our experience, but on the other hand, for efficiency purposes. 24 members, I think, is a little less cumbersome than 26. I don't know how else to state it. But, again, that's an even number, so it would be stated 12 and 12 with CEOs and PJs. So I just wanted to highlight that. That's obviously not a done deal. That will go forward. That sort of plays into, on page 25, the subcommittees and working groups that we have. I would note that, again, it's sort of in the cleaning or trying to become more efficient. Issue item 6 and item 7 on page 35, the Criminal Justice Realignment Subcommittee be dissolved. That mainly deals with Prop 47 workload, which is now, while clearly going on, I think we have a good handle on this workload. An Interpreter Funding Working Group, that would be dissolved and folded into the Funding Methodology Subcommittee for the purposes of consistency. Again, those are decisions made about funding methodologies, and Rebecca's on the line. She co-chairs FMS with me. Rebecca, I don't know if you had any input, anything you wanted to share on this, but our hope is to, again, any decisions that are ultimately going to be considered by TICBAC come from one source, and that is the Funding Methodology Subcommittee, as they're familiar with the proposal. Is there anything on that in particular, Rebecca, you wanted to add?
No, I'm good. Thank you.
Okay. And, Rebecca, you had a big hand in this agenda as well, so anything else? Or any other questions you folks have? I think everything else is pretty self-explanatory in the agenda, but if anybody has any questions about it, now's the time. Okay, so if there's no further questions on that, that's information item 2, and I think that completes our agenda, which we're completing the meeting before 1 o'clock. Any other concerns or questions for the good of the order, so to speak? I want to conclude the meeting the way I started, and I do think this is important to note. Again, I as the chair, thank you all for your work and input. We had some challenging issues that we worked through, and I appreciate to every one of you the work you put in to allow us to get to where we are today. I'm looking forward to a good next budget year. So if there's no other comments, I will deem the meeting adjourned. Thanks, everybody. Enjoy your day.
Thank you. You too.
Good. Thank you. Bye.
The host has left the meeting. So at this time, the meeting will come to an end. Thank you and goodbye.